when Labour was in office, we had an economy that was brought to the brink of a precipice. At the time of the last election, the UK had a higher deficit than Greece, than Ireland, than Spain, than Portugal. We had the highest deficit in Europe. Now we are the fastest growing major Western economy. The deficit has been more than halved. Unemployment is tumbling and growth is back. We turned things around, partly by making some important changes in policy. We disincentivized welfare and we incentivized work. We took a lot of low-paid workers out of the tax system and we switched the incentives. But politicians can't claim the credit for all of this. I mean, it was mainly the wealth creators, the small entrepreneurs and the people who generated the revenues in the private sector who made that recovery possible. And the last thing they want is more burdens from government. There is nothing moral about delaying the budget being balanced and passing debt on to our children and grandchildren.
In the last couple of weeks, we've had quite a lot of uncosted items from the Conservatives. £6 billion of tax cuts, £8 billion of increased spending on the NHS. We've got about £12 billion worth of welfare cuts where there's a lot of uncertainty about where they come from. Have the Conservatives gone into this election promising things that they either can't deliver or they haven't told the electorate where they're coming from?
We were told at the last election that the kind of savings we were proposing, the necessary measures to bring the country back into balance, couldn't be done without inflicting ruinous job losses and a new recession on Britain. And that plainly didn't happen. A lot of economists who were confidently saying that we'd have 4 or 5 million unemployed are now looking ridiculous. We've created more jobs in the UK over the last 4 years than the other 27 members of the European Union put together, which is an extraordinary statistic. So I don't think that what we're now proposing is remotely unrealistic. It's a continuation of what people have seen over the last 5 years. They can look back and see the condition of the country we inherited, a demoralized and bankrupt country, and the condition that the country is in now, and they can make up their minds about whether we're trustworthy.
Let's talk about immigration and its link to the EU. A few years ago, we had the no ifs, no but pledge from David Cameron that immigration will come down to the UK. This time, we just have an ambition to reduce net migration. It's watered down. Does that disappoint you?
No, I haven't got a particular problem with labour mobility. I think it's a very good thing and it's the motor of a modern economy. What it doesn't imply is an automatic right to welfare entitlements. And that's a huge distinction. One thing is people coming to work and contribute to the economy and generate tax revenue. Another is subsidising them to come and work, which is what happens at the moment through tax credits and other in-work benefits. What's happening at present is that British taxpayers are, in effect, contributing to top up the incomes of low-paid EU workers to come to the UK and supplant British workers by, for example, paying child benefit to their children in their countries of origin. Now, this is not something we agreed to in any treaty. This is not something that any British government ever accepted.
Well, why not just get rid of tax credits then?
Well, I think that is that is one of the things we'll do if re-elected. We will take away the entitlement to in-work benefits from people who have paid nothing into the system. We'll create a rule that says you have to have lived and worked and paid in to the pot for a certain minimum period of time before you can start drawing on it.
What if that person's British? What if that person has just come out of university? They're 21 years old. By definition, they have never paid
into the system.
They are in exactly the same situation. Well, it's just one happens to be foreign and one happens to be British.
And every country on the planet draws that distinction because that's the basis of every welfare state. Every state on earth necessarily discriminates on the basis of national identity. That's what governments do because they're answerable to their own taxpayers who are also their voters. But I think whether you're left or right, it is unsustainable to have a system where you have 60 million people filling the pot on welfare, but 600 million who are able to draw on it. And nobody could regard that as a sustainable or indeed as a morally justifiable system.
If there is a vote to pull out of the EU, what would happen to the million plus Britons living in other European countries? Should they be making plans to come back to the UK if their host countries decide they're no longer wanted?
No, because most of them were living there before those countries became EU members. And so they know that the two things are not connected. The largest destination for UK's resident in the EU is Spain. A large number of Brits were living there before 1986, when Spain became a member of the European Union. And they had sensible bilateral rights, which gave them certain entitlements under Spanish law, as countries around the world do. EU membership was not a necessary precondition for their living there. If it were, there wouldn't be any Brits living in Australia
But if the UK is turning away, say, low-income, low-skilled Spanish migrants, of which there are plenty in the UK, why on earth should Spain continue to host a 70-year-old pensioner from the UK, pay an expensive hip operation for them if they're paying no income tax into the coffer?
We're not suggesting turning away anyone who wants to come to work. There is a guaranteed right of free movement under the EU treaties, and outside the EU, I think we would keep a measure of sensible bilateral free movement of labour.
Is that where your policy differentiates with UKIP? Because UKIP do want to turn away some low-skilled or unskilled workers from the UK because they say they're taking British people's jobs.
It's really worth stressing this. You know, one thing is coming to another country with a work permit and being free to sell your labour there, which I think is a good thing and is a driver of growth and innovation. Another thing is having an automatic right of residence, which entitles you to bring your dependents in, which entitles you to all the welfare and benefits claims and the pension and so on. Now, it should be a huge distinction between the two things, and it's sad that in this debate the two are so often run together.
Aren't you trying to fix a problem that doesn't really exist? As I understand it, the number of EU migrants going to the UK and claiming benefits is in the tens of thousands, and they are proportionally less likely to claim benefits than the British population as a whole.
That's not the case if by benefits you include tax credits. That's
because a company wants to employ somebody, and that's the system that we have.
Sure, and that's what I'm arguing with. If you go at the moment from having an average wage job in one of the new member countries to having a minimum wage job in the UK, when you factor in the benefits, including the payment of child benefit to children who have never set foot in the UK, you considerably increase your income, according to one study, by 250%. If you factor out those in-work benefits, you don't increase your income at all. And so there will be a substantial practical drop-off in the number of low-paid migrants. I don't think there'll be a big difference at the upper ends of the income scale. And I think that's only fair. It's not reasonable to ask my constituents to pay taxes to subsidise people to come here and take jobs that in a completely unsubsidised framework would not be profitable.
Given the horrendous death toll in the Mediterranean this week, was it a mistake for the UK government to pull out at the end of 2014 of the EU rescue support for boat migrants?
You know, there are some issues that people seize on as kind of great symbolic issues. But we should be honest here. The ability of the UK, which is a long way away from the fulcrum of these tragedies, to have a huge impact one way or the other is remarkably limited.
We used to have the biggest navy in the world. We still have quite a big one.
Right. But there are all sorts of places where we could be deploying that navy in order to prevent all sorts of bad things. You know, there are things that are our immediate responsibility, and there are things where we should be realistic about our ability to make a huge difference. You know, there are things that we could do to reduce the death toll. There are things that could be done by the countries concerned, but Britain is only a relatively remote and distant player, and our capacity for unilateral action when we're talking about people who are moving from Libya to Malta or Italy should not be overstated.
However, there was an intention behind this. If you read the quote from the Foreign Office Minister, Lady Annerley, to the House of Lords, where she articulated the strategy, the reason for pulling out of rescue support, she said that there was an unintended pull factor. The government believes the most effective way to prevent refugees and migrants attempting this dangerous crossing is to focus our attention on countries of origin and transit. We've seen that policy has been a singular failure this week.
Well, I mean, you can't say it's been a total failure. The UK is enormously engaged in the humanitarian relief effort in Syria, in Libya, and in other places. And if you factor that out, we're necessarily talking about a hypothetical here. We don't know what would happen if we weren't involved in that humanitarian way. But I can't imagine that not being involved would have improved the situation. But, I mean, to answer the point about what should be the correct strategy and how do we minimise these horrible drownings, it seems to me that you have to get to a position where somebody who is picked up just outside Libyan waters can be returned to Libya rather than deposited in Italy. I think if you did that, you would enormously decrease the number of people attempting the journey, and you would therefore save a great many lives.
I remember at the heart of the last election manifesto was a real emphasis on the environment, on green policies, on saving the planet. We all will remember the photo shoot with the Huskies in the Arctic Circle. Now, if you look at green measures, they're pretty much at the bottom of the environmental section of this manifesto. Have the Conservative Party given up on reducing carbon emissions?
If you compare us to other countries, we have got a much better record on reducing our carbon emissions than most developed economies. So again, it's the question of whether you want cuddly rhetoric or whether you want action. There's been a huge fall in carbon emissions in the UK since the 90s.
How much credit do you give to the EU for that?
I think the main driver of it is, frankly, the replacement of coal as the main source of energy with alternative sources. You know, I think the environment actually can improve and is improving if we would only see it. There's a kind of mandatory pessimism in this debate, which is often quite divorced from facts. There are a lot of things that are getting better. Air quality is better than it ever was in Britain. The rivers are cleaner than they ever were. We have salmon in the Thames. I saw an otter for the first time in my adult life in the wild last year. We need to sometimes break away from this sense that everything is on the point of collapse. We are breathing cleaner air and drinking cleaner water than at any time before in modern times, possibly at any time before ever, you know. And
that's quite a UK-centric view, though, because if you're
I'm standing for election in the UK. I'm not standing for election in Hanoi.